That's melodic drum soloist Brent Lewis with Doom Taka Doom. It's from his 1990 album, Earth Tribe Rhythms. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are going to be continuing our discussion from yesterday, talking about just where the heck are we in the scheme of things? What is it that is going on in this country? Well, we could start out by talking about, we'll use as a reference point Charlottesville, the protest, the deadly protest at Charlottesville, Virginia. And the question that we're going to try and pursue today is, after Charlottesville, is it a slow burn or a slow burnout for Trump? America has noted President Donald Trump's slow to show, half-hearted reaction to the deadly white racist protest in Charlottesville, Virginia, last Saturday. And they're seeing that swift reaction and opposition by the people to other Charlottesville-style protests planned across the country are being canceled. Trump bewilderingly believes that there's a political opportunity here to build, or in some cases rebuild, his base for election. Does this not suggest that we are right to say that, as we've been saying for quite some time, there's something wrong in that man's head? Something is wrong up there. But we clearly could see that a lot of things are happening that he's either choosing not to recognize or not to respond to, or basically he's being advised to stay away from it all, let it die down a bit before he engages, whatever it is. It is important to note that this is a turning point, a very significant turning point in what could be a people's struggle. What do you think? What is up with Donald Trump? I mean, I really maintain that we should think about these people themselves a lot less and think about where we are going a lot more. But there are times when situations become the reason to act or not act. Situations give us additional information about where things are going, and therefore how we are gearing up to respond. What is anticipated as the goal here, not only by us, but by the people coming up against us in all these different kinds of ways? But at this point, we know that Donald Trump did not respond immediately. It was, anybody could see, it was as a significant event, a series of significant events that certainly needed to be responded to by the head of state. After all, the way things were going, it looked as if there was going to be a ripple effect. And soon, before you know it, the whole country might have been engulfed in unrest. And that poses a security problem. It does. So it is startling that 2 days would go by before the president said anything. And that was just remarkable. And then when he spoke, it was one of those vapid things that, you know, he didn't really assign blame. He didn't demand that we return to normal, whatever that is. He didn't do anything presidential for a whole 2 days. And that allowed the really crazy people to dominate the news. As crazy as they were and still are, they had the news people at their fingertips. They had the opportunity to spread the venom. They had the opportunity to make it look like what they were doing was really not only normal, but within their rights as Americans to express themselves under the First Amendment. So they got the chance to put their spin on whatever the news was that was being disseminated. So we have a chance now to talk about that. From your vantage point, how do you read the president's reaction? And more so, what do you see as a way for us to go, the regular folk? What should we be doing in this time? And we cannot let down our guard. This has happened, and it will continue to happen, because as atrocious as the action was, it nonetheless emboldened a lot of people. So we are not out of the safety zone yet, you know. So let's talk about that today. 888-874-4888. What I'm looking for in these discussions, you are offering us an analysis from your point of view. There's no wrong or there's no right. There is, however, your opinion based on some understanding you have about how things have been working and how things should be working. And also, on top of that, you should be able to tell us what you think we ought to do as a collective. How do we cope with the situation as it stands? Okay, so we start off with Marie from Baltimore. Hello, Marie.
Hello, Latricia, and thank you so much for taking my call. I hope you're feeling all right. I will make this short so others can call. I said a month ago to one of my friends that talks politics, not too many do, that I felt the government, I didn't use Trump's name, is trying to have blacks and whites fight. That was my opinion a month ago. And I feel that what we just saw last Saturday is an example of my thoughts. I listened to a former FBI person, and I can't exactly remember all his words, but he said one way we could go, and then another way we might go, which is dangerous. And he felt that if we go this dangerous way, we're going to have a lot of problems. I'm just sorry, I just don't remember all his words. And I recently saw the film Detroit. I hope you can see that. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, in this movie, you'll see white law enforcement officers acting the way some of our Baltimore officers act here and across the nation in a bad way. And if this current president stays in office, we're going to have some troubles. Someone in Baltimore said this week, we're ready for him. I mean, we're ready for whoever that comes up here and tries to start trouble. I have
no. Let me ask you, though. You said that you think that the plan by Donald Trump is to encourage warfare between blacks and whites. What would be the benefit of that?
I couldn't tell you, but, you know, he has been heard to say, or he is supporting the white supremacy groups in this country. They voted for him, and you saw David Duke over this weekend, happy what Trump is doing or so forth. Do they want to have us fight because the economic conditions in this country are bad? You know, is that the reason? And they have to blame a certain group of people to fight? I have no idea. But I think we're
You actually do have an idea, and you just expressed it. Thanks so much for calling and getting us started today. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air.
Hey, Trace, how's it going?
Good. How about you?
All right, all right. It's strange to me. I actually appreciated Donald Trump's silence because that lets me and people who read into it know where he stands. I feel that I've always said this before, Trump is a white supremacist himself. And what makes you think that he's going to condemn the actions of the people who support him publicly and privately? What makes you think that he's going to denounce them? So, my thing is, I think with the events that happened in Charlottesville, this is starting to bring racism more out to the front where people can see it because, we as black people, we still are trying to understand this system of racism, white supremacy. People think that, racism is just, calling somebody the N-word or even in the lynchings and everything like that. But it's more to it than that. I mean, that's the terroristic part of white supremacy. But, we tend to not look at the subtle parts of it where it affects our everyday lives in regards to housing and banking and other things that, that we can fall victim to. So, it's a major cancer in this society that's really coming out to light. And I've had discussions about, the difference between, what's worse between racism and capitalism. And I always have this discussion with people. And I know you have a caller named Dave from Brooklyn who, talks about the oligarchs and everything like that. But, the one thing I had a discussion with this one woman, and I asked her, okay, so if there's an issue, if capitalism is worse than racism, then name me some black elites or oligarchs, that hinders this problem. And, because most of the time when people think about, the elites and the oligarchs, you think about the Koch brothers or Warren Buffett or something like that, but you can't name me one black person who's rich and has an effect politically on a group of people. And, I just can't see when you talk about the racism versus capitalism thing, I just feel like, racism wins out as far as, being a worse condition for this country.
Well, I don't know why we should be even talking about which is worse. I mean, when somebody tells you, well, look, I'm going to cut off both your arms, or I could cut off both your legs. Which would you prefer? I don't know that's a good choice that you've given. What we need to understand, I think, is that these folks who have such thoughts are in power. They could demand anything they wish because they have the mechanisms to enforce it, to enforce what they want, to get what they want. They have the power. One thing I was hoping that somebody would notice is that throughout all of this, we haven't seen a coalition, a serious coalition of people, because this, of course, was targeted largely at people of color, But we didn't see that organization. I'm grateful for what we got, because we did see, and that was a very good aspect of the action that they took, which was on the other side, on our side, if I could use that term, we did see people coming together. We did see people recognizing not only the need to come together, but the practicality of it. We did see evidence that people are beginning to understand that it is much bigger than a black and white thing. We're dealing with sane people who are being targeted by insane people. They have the weapons, they have the wherewithal, they have media, they have all kinds of ways of winning at their game. And look at what they used. A statue. Now, whoever would have thought a statue could cause this much havoc and continue to cause this much havoc, because it was effective. It was an effective way to reach people who didn't want to be, you know, all out there with their secret beliefs. And so they couched it in all kinds of terms about the Constitution and the right to have statues that speak to their history and the history of the state and all these kinds of silly arguments that they're making. But the bottom line that we should not ignore is that they made everything happen, practically, that they wanted to happen. They had the power. They organized it. And now they added the other dimension to it. This wasn't just a protest. This was, I could kill you. Now, when an ordinary citizen, you know, clearly his mother said, at least the tone in which she said it, indicated that she herself believed her son was a little wacko. But the fact is, even a white wacko who subscribes to this kind of philosophy can have the satisfaction of knowing that he can. He may later be convicted and whatever else would happen to him, but for the instant moment, here is a 20-year-old guy who, under the guise that he is entitled to something, can just take a life. And he would have done more if he had the time and the opportunity. But that is extraordinary conditioning.
Yeah, you, Trish, and can I add to that, because there seems to be a movement in the media from this alt-right, in particular one guy named Richard Spencer, who is basically normalizing this behavior. And people are literally following this guy. And so every time I see him on TV, I cringe when I see him on TV. And he's not like on little outlets. He's on mainstream media outlets.
Yes. Because that's the thing, that the techniques and the tactics that they have learned to make the abhorrent perfectly acceptable, to make murder just, you know, it's a protest and some people do go overboard and, you know, it comes with the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so pernicious about it. A very casual, they have done a pretty good job, as you say. I mean, I agree with that. That's a very keen observation, that it is normal now. And there's no, unless it's really extraordinary, people wouldn't see that as being important to talk about.
Yeah, and their code word, they are calling themselves white nationalists, and that's a code word for white terrorists or white racists or, you know, whatever. But white nationalist sounds nicer, but be careful of that.
Yeah, you got to have an intellect to handle how you phrase these things. Unfortunately, many of their followers don't have that kind of intellect. And frankly, the leadership doesn't care. They just want people. They don't care whether these people are even sane. They want the numbers. They want to show a force, and they want force. The time has come in their heads to make a definitive move and get this country back on track. You know what that means.
Yeah,
that's what they do. That's the program, and it's working. They've co-opted the media to a larger degree. They have made the odious actions and thoughts seem perfectly normal and worthy of discussion. Where is there in all of this a logical thought? There isn't a logical thought. But they do recognize that they can build faster by, you know, they adding more to the ranks. They don't care who they are and what level of understanding they have. They don't care about that. And there's so many people out there who would derive a sense of value, a sense of superiority by joining up with a gang like this. All of this goes into the factor. But we're talking, though, too, I haven't heard you talk or address the issue of Donald Trump, our great and illustrious president.
Well, you know, like I said in the beginning, I did appreciate his truth and his silence about his true feeling and understanding about, you know, where he sits at, because I just think that people really don't understand how vile of a racist he is. And it's crazy because of the fact that you just go back and listen to what he says, you know, in his campaign, and you can point out whatever you want to in regards to his, his racist behavior. But this right here should really, it should really resonate, you know, through people throughout this country where he stands. And so I guess, you know, my thing is, I don't know. I mean, I don't believe that Donald Trump is going to be impeached within his term. I just feel like, you know, the House still, even though they don't like him, they won't rid themselves of him, not just yet. But I'm just expecting him to serve out his, you know, his 4 years, and then at that point we just move on from there.
Great. And what do we do in the meantime?
Well, we have to basically make sure we have the defenses politically and economically. And, I mean, you know, with
you're frustrated and I'm frustrated. And this is the flip side of the coin. But at some point, we got to get into it. But you have enough time to think about it because it is going to be unavoidable.
Yes.
What do
yes.
we do? We know they're crazy and they're pursuing, but they're pursuing their agenda. And in terms of what it is they identify as the agenda, they're doing quite well. They're sticking to the plan.
Mm-hmm.
We are out here and we have no idea what it is we ought to do, so we better get busy and start talking about what it is we need to do, because evidently it is undeniable. Even your life is on the line now.
And that's what a lot
Thanks.
Of people
Great
don't
to hear
talk
from
about.
You today. Thank you. Exactly. Eric from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Eric.
Hi. I've been listening to the discussion, you know. And I keep going back to the people that we elect as the good presidents, you know, the good guys. And, you know, you look at the Obama administration and you look at the messaging, you had people of color being hunted, you know, by police. And at every turn, there was no penalties. There was no, you know, really, they were absolved of all those crimes. You know, you consider what's the messaging to the you know, white supremacists. You consider what happened in Flint and the reaction of the president 2 years later. What's the messaging about the worth, the value of black people? You know, you consider what happened by all these things. You look at all these things and you realize that on both sides you have insanity. But for me, Trump is less insane because he doesn't have the intellectual capacity, it seems like. You know, he doesn't make any arguments. He says hard
things. Well, I think you're giving us here a false concept because it doesn't matter who is more evil than the other. The fact is they both are and have been.
Yes,
I talked about Obama many times.
When we get caught up, I think we get caught up in the... Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm listening.
No, I think that this discussion has become one that's caught up with Trump as if any of this is new. You know, and I think it would do us more, you know, it would be more useful to talk about the conditions that, you know, have always existed in this country. And the fact that people of color seem to want to pretend like it's one happy world, you know, when one party is in office and when the other party is in office, the world is falling apart. You know, and I think that's a big part of what's happening, because now there's all these reactions that I think, I don't know, to me, that if we would educate each other more about the reality, I agree with Elizabeth yesterday in that why should those statues be torn down when people don't know anything about them? Why not have massive education so that people would know what happened? What these people represented. A lot of the people that are arguing against it don't even understand. So by that same argument, you should tear down everything that's in Washington, D.C., the Lincoln Monument, all of that, because those people were the same. They were the same. They pretended to keep the country intact. They pretended that, oh, okay, fine, let's let these people have a little bit of rights. But then what happened? You know, what did they do to the same people, their own offspring? What did they do? So all of these statues, you know, be torn down and then everything is good after that? So to me, it's kind of irrational. What if you had those monuments and went about having a massive education about what is happening, what has happened? Like, another part of this story is the whole reparations. How can there be reparations when the same people who have been, you know, killing for profit, who have been benefiting from all this, are doing the same thing right now? What would they want to repair? So the arguments for reparation is like, it's a dream that doesn't, you know, that doesn't consider what is presently happening. It's the same slavery. It's just a different version. Anytime they want to, they could take your home. Anytime they want to, they could take your bank account. Anytime they want to, they could take your life. They could lock you up forever. So, you know, you're going to demand that they give you what they've stolen without addressing the fact that it's still ongoing? Why would they do that? So it's like, you know, we're running around making these arguments, but the people have no idea what is presently happening, you know, and that both sides, all the sides that we're turning to are doing it collectively, and then they put us in the middle and watch us fight. So we're the gladiators that kind of entertain them, because they get to walk away with the bank as we're fighting over the peanuts. These people want to keep their statue. Fine. Educate us about what those statues represent. Keep your statue, you know? So to tear down the statue and then what, we pretend that nothing, you know, everything is better? I don't think that's the way. So they want to hold on to those symbols because they're suffering too. And they're suffering, and they attribute that suffering to a certain group of people. And we attribute our suffering to a certain group of people. But it's the same people. It's the same people, and they're doing it collectively. And they enjoy it. That's why those police could stand down. They enjoy it when we fight. They enjoy it because they see the circus, and they're looking at, oh, you know, these people are not going to get anything they want. But let them fight it out.
Well, I can't disagree with a thing that you have said today. I can't. Except I would like to ask you to consider something about revolutions and this kind of action that people take from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that anybody who decided to take action is of the opinion that they would win. I think they know that they're up against a very, very impressive system that has had a lot of practice, that has all the equipment, it has all the means of winning, and it will win. But I think that in the minds of those who showed up on the other side, it was also a wake-up call for them, regardless of what we think. It was a point of action, and they were called to action, and they showed up. And they showed up in ways that people did not expect them to show up. They showed up, black, white, Latino, Asian, everybody was represented there. It was not one of those actions taken to specifically transmit that information. It was because they lived there and they reached a point of being fed up. And they also reached a point of disgust with the political system and specifically with this president. So I don't disagree with anything you've said. You're absolutely correct on every point. But you negated to consider how things happen sometimes. They may not be addressing the specific things that you think they ought to address. But from an organizational point of view, you have to give them credit for mobilizing, for coming together and doing something, which, by the way, needed to be done. Because you would notice
what needed to be done. They wanted to have their white rights protest, right? I mean,
no, I'm talking about the people who organized, the people who ended up being the targets of this guy
they
with
organized
his
to
car.
Negate them of what they wanted to do.
Yes.
You know? They organized to negate them. You know, when I first came to this country, I was in upstate in Poughkeepsie. And like a few days after I came, there was a Ku Klux Klan march right through the main streets in Poughkeepsie. So my point is that this is all around. This is all around us. You know,
Poughkeepsie happened to be the seat, by the way, of a lot of white violence against black, even Paul Robeson. And Paul Robeson and I'm forgetting the name, I'll come back to it, attacked. They had to smuggle them out of the town. They were targets of murder. I mean, that's really what it was. So we've been through this cycle often enough. We haven't amassed the power. We haven't harnessed the power that we do have to affirm our rights.
And I think it's because of the miseducation. We continue to be reactive. We continue to be reactive. I think a lot of this is about the ignorance. And, you know,
but you've seen it also as a sequential thing. And many times in life, it doesn't go according to sequence. It happens the way it happens, and then people have to figure out what to do with it while it is going on. You know, if we were to say, well, first we read a book, then we discuss the book, then we extract from the book what needs to be extracted to fill in the education we don't have about the subject, and then we start planning how to fight back. No, it doesn't work like that. Very often, very, very important progress is made spontaneously and not sequentially. Life does not work sequentially. So we have to cope with the fact that we're doing the best we can. In an ideal world, we would follow sequence to the T. But very often, it doesn't happen like that. We respond to the moment, we respond to the situation, and that is how everything falls into place, spontaneously. There's a number of downsides to that.
No, I'm saying it seems like we're repeating failing things because of these reactions. You know, we're repeating.
Yes, and we are. We are. Let's not deny that we are repeating things.
As it's happening, we refuse to educate. You know, we keep talking about these reactions as though this is, you know, these are great things. But no, I think that it's because of the ignorance. It's because that we've refused for so long to actually educate.
Here's the thing: I get it immediately. You have to, as an activist-minded person, you have to educate yourself about how life really works. It does not work in linear fashion. It almost never does. It does not work in sequential fashion. It works in its own way. What we do have to do, and I agree with you 100%, but anybody who's been out there for a while, you get to understand that it is not going to be perfect at all. Don't expect perfection. So you have to settle for certain things that may sound even simplistic, or it may sound totally irrelevant. But in the minds of the people, the fact that they are responding is progress. And it will take a much longer time to arrive at a point that you're talking about. I'm saying, let's also understand, educate ourselves. We have to do that because many, many struggles are destroyed by over-expectation. You have to shoot for an issue. You have to shoot for a place where you could maximize participation. It can't be, you can't start off organizing people with the assumption that they have PhD degrees. It will take a long time. Organizing is not a fast thing. And that's why in the midst of all of this chaos, you always have to see that you gained something. The fact that people were mobilized at all is a plus. Now that you've mobilized people, you begin to shape the direction in which they're going. You begin to give them the education that they need. You begin to form community around action, and that requires education. It's a gradual process. Some people will tell you who have been out here for, several decades. They laugh at the younger ones. Look at them. They expect all of this to be solved by tomorrow. No, it's not. And they're not making fun of anybody. It's just that this is a reality. It's a reality. You look at any of the African continents, every of the African countries, and you see the long road, a long road to independence. It never happens fast. unless it's especially egregious. It will happen fast, but it would also happen haphazardly. What you're talking about is a disciplined approach. And for that, you have to cultivate people. You have to educate people and give them something to consider as a possible solution. You have to invite them into the process, even if, you know, they are suspicious and they don't want to be part of that process. They want to show up, do whatever they have to do, go home, and tomorrow's another day. Those are the realities of organizing. So you are dead right in your initial observation about the need for education. Organizing, however, is a whole different process, and it's time-consuming. And that's what they know. It actually could distress a person. It could depress a person that the goal will not be attained anytime soon. You're talking in the way that an organizer would see it. You're talking almost from an idealistic point of view. Realistic organizing tells you, you have to prepare to be measured in how you go, because all those things that you outlined, which are absolutely necessary, they take time to take hold. They don't happen automatically. I mean, I've gathered in so many groups, oh, they're enthusiastic, and I mean, this must be done, and blah, blah, blah. They have a clear analysis of it, but they won't make it to the next meeting. You see, you lost them in one meeting, because from the word go, they have no intentions of getting exercised about anything. They just want to talk. It would be a rare day that people actually mean what they say and say what they mean and make a commitment and support the institutions that support them. I've been through that many, many times. You'd start with a group of 200 and you go to sleep happy because you got 200 people. The next meeting, you're lucky if you get 2. You can't do mass movement with 2 people. That's why they call it a mass movement. You see what I'm saying? So I recognize and I give you a ton of credit for making the observations that you made, because you're absolutely right. I, too, am absolutely right. It's not going to happen soon. And all of the things that you are proposing, these elements that are necessary for organizing, you have to expect that they will not happen overnight. People won't see the light that quickly. You know? So thanks so much. That's a great call. I appreciate it. Chris from New York, you're on the air. Chris?
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Hello?
Are you there? Is this Chris?
Yes, I'm here. Hello, Eutrice.
Okay. Hello.
Hello? Hi, good afternoon to all the PLN listeners and staff, and also to you, Eutrice. It's been a while. I hope everything is good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate your kind thoughts.
And I want to first slightly disagree with the last caller about the statues. And while I'm not a big fan of marching, I do appreciate this removal of Confederate flags. I do appreciate the removal of these statues. I mean, it might be a supposed war hero, or it might be someone who thought it was okay to mutilate black women because they could allegedly tolerate the pain. I think that those images, especially with education, which is what I think he was saying we need more of, Yes. If you spend 10 to 15 years of your life walking through these areas, you develop memories during those years, who you were, who you were with, what your life was like, what the weather was like, the smells and the food. All of that stuff is part of your history. And when you do receive that education at some point, let's say you're lucky enough to at some point learn about the statue you spent your childhood playing in front of, that will be attached to those things. And I think we deserve, I think humanity deserves a better symbol for our past. And by that, I don't mean that we should be deluded or we should try to change history. I'm saying that we should remove those villains from public space with the understanding that, yes, they did exist, and we could put that in a textbook and we could learn it in that context. But not, I do not agree that they should be allowed to exist where they are. And even to his question of the Lincoln and whoever
what?
Else might be out there, and even his about the Lincoln Monument, he's asked, well, what are we going to do? Remove all of those? And to him, I say yes. That is something that we should actually consider. I don't think we should say he was kind of a slave owner or he was kind of racist. If you were known to be racist, I don't think anyone should be placed above or below. I think they all should go. And they should all be replaced with people who we can verify were actual freedom fighters, people who were definitely into social work and abolitionists. I think that's who should get that stuff. I don't think we have space. I don't think we should provide space for any of these confirmed corrupt characters and even these more suspicious ones. I think it should be a demand at the tip of our tongues to remove them all, not some of them, but to remove them all. And I do believe in the removal of those images. And I think that I think two callers ago, someone mentioned this normalizing of this behavior. We were talking about the media, and I think we're all normalizing this stuff by not calling it all for what it is. They're all symbols of racism, symbols of oppression, symbols of imperialism and genocide, all of them, not some of them, all of them. And we see that and it was normalized early. I mean, when our president was fought tooth and nail for, I don't know, if he wanted to order toilet paper, there was an argument about it. But he went on television and promised a peaceful transition of power. A peaceful transition of power. When we say normalizing something, we got it from the commander-in-chief. This person ran on a platform of racism, of bigotry, and made some of the most insane statements you couldn't even make if you were a toll booth clerk. You couldn't talk like that to people in public about shooting someone or killing someone and still getting... You couldn't just talk to people like that in your everyday life. This is how this man communicated, and our former president said that he was going to provide a peaceful transition of power. So when those keys were handed over, it was done so without any fight. And I think that he played a role in normalizing that. And I think that we play a role in normalizing it when we don't make a mention of it. You know, you go to the Carolinas and you talk to a black person and they're wearing a Confederate flag and a T-shirt talking about it's part of their heritage. I mean, I think symbols are very important, and I think that they should be removed. And I'm not saying I agree with them on the education point. They should be taught in a place where people are being taught to understand what it is and why they're being taught this. And I think it should be taught with a sense of this guy fought in a war, and we are ashamed of war. When we go to war, it means we failed. But this whole honoring, you know, the military, even during football games, it's just, and we just sit there like it's okay, even if quote unquote progresses.
I have a different view, and you may disagree with it. I think we put way too much emphasis in things that are highly symbolic. And at a time, we will choose to take on an action as if we don't know that we ought to be prepared to take on that action. You see, we talk and talk and talk. How long did it take to just get the money together to erect that monument to Martin Luther King? That could have been done if we were an organized community. The money would have been raised within a month.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been no problem. And we don't see the connection. When you say you're going to do something, you know, and we have so many examples of that. I could point to Marcus Garvey. He said we should have, since they don't want us on their ships, their steam liners, we build our own. And they did it. There was, I mentioned some time ago, seeing a map of Harlem. And there were a lot of things blacked out. And I said, well, why are these things blacked out? And they said, oh, these are the businesses that were built by Marcus Garvey. Everything from shoe making to printing to transportation to restaurants, all Harlem was a humming economic machine. They owned the real estate that these businesses were built on. They weren't just flapping their lips. They were serious about creating an economic model. And they did it. You know what it is to have a steamship line in the 1920s and you going up against all that heavy,
definitely,
you know?
And I agree with that, and I believe in and agree with that work.
But we
I hope I don't come up as if I'm arguing
this.
Against that.
No, I mean we have to commit, and in committing, we signify to anybody or everybody we're very serious about what we're saying. So if we say that statue is coming down, guess what? It's coming down. We're not going to waste time arguing. And the other side, they know our proclivity for talking loud, as James Brown says, and saying nothing. You want the statue down? We want it down by next Tuesday.
And now, can I ask a question now? I agree with that sentiment, and again, I do agree with taking these statues down, and I also do agree with the work of Mr. Garvey. I hope I didn't come across as if I was arguing against that. No.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I'm saying we have an obligation to do things in a way that people understand there is a science to the actions that we are taking to assure success. Because now this issue with the statue is going to go on for a long, long time. I'm not opposed to people being offended by the statue. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying you have to use your political science here. You have to understand how the system works, so that by the time you make your move, it is 99% in place that you will be successful. We got some education to do. We have some education to teach. I agree. Don't misunderstand me. I think anything that a group of people agree to that would be well within our interest and our benefit, you pursue it. But you don't pursue it unless you're ready, because you're taking on a fight. Whether it's a big fight or a small fight, you have to be prepared to fight and to win. we have a lot of things that we need to revisit. We don't have to reinvent a thing. We just reference the approaches taken in years gone by that were spectacularly successful. We don't have to go look for a new book. We don't have to do any of that. That's already been done. It's been tested, and it has been tested as a successful method. So adopt it.
May I ask one question?
We're down to 2 minutes, so go right ahead.
You close out. You sure? Okay, well, I agree with you, and I guess my question is to get our people more in tune with our self-interest. As far as I can see, I'm 39 now. As far as I can see, we are more splintered now than we've ever been. You know, you got some people want to be Republicans, some want to be Democrats, and by people, I mean black people at this point. Some believe in abortion, some don't. Some hate gays, some don't. Like, we seem to have all these extra issues outside of our primary, you know, survival.
Yeah, but it has all, this is the thing. It has always been like that. So don't.
And so
don't
got us past
deceive
that in the
yourself
past,
into thinking this is new.
Well,
this has always been the case.
What has gotten us past that in the past, I guess, is where I was going.
No, we've always been confused because there have always been so many different designs on us. It's a miracle that we even have a working brain at this point. We've won that victory. So we shouldn't beat up ourselves. We have done a remarkable job of survival so far, although we have been under unrelenting attack. What we need to do is to invest more in ourselves and in our interests and reject anything that threatens that. Just reject it. I don't wear false eyelashes because I see no sense to them. I reject that. See, you make these decisions and you stick to them, and that's the end of that. Well, we have to go, unfortunately, because our time is up. It's been a wonderful interaction, I would say, and I so appreciate your ideas, and I want to encourage us always to stretch our minds and think beyond what people define as the border for you. So, I thank you very much, and I encourage us all to continue looking into things and come to your own conclusions after you investigate. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. I'll try myself, my best, I should say, to answer mails myself. With my hand, it's getting better. So we'll see each other tomorrow, and I thank you again for making this program so necessary by offering your best at all times. Thank you so much.